I hope your confidence is justified. That's wonderful. Total. This is, I guess, the only movie, with the exception of The Sting and Jaws, in which we've had no negative reaction. I'm sure there will be some. There always is. I mean, to any work, it's scary, but pleasant. We've had the other kind. I don't know how many of you saw The Island.
We're a polite group of folks. We weren't going to bring that one out.
Well, that's all right.
Although it does bring up the question about when can you begin to sense a picture's direction and its box office response? Or is it impossible?
No, it's not. Unfortunately, because of electronic journalism, shows like Entertainment Tonight now have, as some of you might have seen,
movie track.
They interview kids or interview the audience to tell, make projections virtually on as they see the movie. We don't know how a picture will. We know one thing: when you're dealing with a picture like this, which will open from 800 to 1100 theaters, and will not be nurtured, and where the aim is to create an immediate awareness of the movie with occasions such as this and large television and print advertising campaigns, the picture is supposed to open, as they say. Some pictures never open. It's the scariest thing in the world. I think perhaps some of you who saw and admired The Right Stuff, where everybody was carrying everybody around on their shoulders and it was the greatest event. I don't know whether you all felt that way about it, but I thought the picture was good, and I would have guaranteed success for it, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
And you from Houston, I mean, would have been a very...
It
would have been a severe critic of it if you didn't feel that way.
Exactly.
So the answer to your question is, it's a very scary business, but we think that even in this age where journalists are always being attacked... by their subjects, we think journalists are people. And we think if they like the movie, they go to movies more than most people, so that the reaction has been terrific. And so if this is a sample of what the public, paying public, will see, we've got a hit. How big? Nobody knows. And on the other hand, I have to go back and say, you can't be sure of anything. We think so. It's a very daring movie. One of the things that attracted us to it was the fact that it was not a researcher's dream. It didn't pay much attention to demographics, but the people at Fox and the man, David Weitzner, whose other two movies he marketed, E.T. and Star Wars, and I hate to even say this, but he said, I get that kind of a feeling. We don't know. Steven Spielberg was just as anxious before E.T. opened, because I saw him at that time, and he thought that he truly did not feel that that movie was going to, he thought it was a big risk. A friendly alien, forget it.
Do you think that the idea that we have so many friendly aliens these days, supposed to say the 50s, when they all seem to be coming down to gobble us up, is sort of representative of our new ideas about, say, technology? We used to really suspect, you know, in the 50s it was the bomb and it was going to blow us all up. But now we've got home computers, so maybe technology isn't so bad after all.
Hadn't thought about that. I think it's probably our desire for peace, maybe, or a disenchantment with our own planet, which some people think we're despoiling to some degree. And people feel that they're more intelligent than we are out there and have done more and have seen more, or else how could they get here? And having got here, they probably overcome the destructive instincts that have characterized the human race. Not really. It was the title of the book, and we thought it was a name that would stay in the memory and in the mind. It was easy to register. We've had luck with some one-word titles or two-word titles. Dick and I don't believe in research, but I'm sure the that our distributors, Fox probably did a lot of it. They do awareness studies. But I remember that someone told me that E.T. had scored so low on the awareness or want to see, you know, before it came out. I'm very wary about research. I think it's great in marketing and distribution. When your picture is out, you can tell how it's going to do. But I'm very wary about that sort of thing. Or we wouldn't have taken on this subject, because this would not have passed the test. I mean, I think it would have flunked at the first tier if you submitted the script to a research organization and said, how about this as a movie?
Doesn't skew right with demographics.
No. I react as a former drama critic in the New York theater. That's what we're accustomed to with plays. You know, pictures never folded. Now, of course, they do have the ancillary rights, but it is true what you say. It wouldn't be the first 4 or 5 days, because the deals that are made for pictures like this generally have a guarantee of a sufficient number of weeks to enable the movie-going public to sample it, talk about it, and decide whether they want people to come and see it. And I don't believe you can ever hype a picture into success. You can buy an opening. That's about all you can do. And then it goes down 75-85%. The reason this film is being shown so early is that we are confident about it. We think the picture, we're not trying to hide it. We're not showing it the Thursday before the Friday or it opens. And so there's plenty of time for it to percolate. June 21st. I haven't checked.
You mentioned the book. Was it a published novel or an unpublished novel?
It was a supremely unpublished novel. We've offered it to everyone. It was written by a man named David Saperstein. Lily Zanuck brought it to us. She was designated to handle a lesser agent. She brought it to us. We thought it was a poignant idea, and we bought the film rights. We had two writers on it, and we tried every way, and so did the agent, to get the book published. Finally, when the script of the movie was available, publication was then, they made a bid for it. I've forgotten. It'll be in the bookstores probably next week. In paper bound, but I think Good House, I think it's one of the Random House subsidiaries, I'm not sure. But it's the book had to be to conform to the movie script. The author went back. The author has seen the movie and loves it. Loves the movie and thought it was the spirit of his book. It shows once again how different the movie industry is since I entered it over 30 years ago when we bought bestsellers. And when, I mean, now any idea that's a good movie will be considered, regardless of whether it's famous or whether it's ever been heard of. The Verdict was not a particularly best-selling book at all, very modest book.
I read a story once by Nelson Bond about
I think one of these tapes is just gone.
In which the effects of A Fountain of Youth reversed the aging process to the extent that the recipient literally returned gradually through stages back to childhood, back to the womb. What, not having read the book here, is the effect here simply to rejuvenate the person, or do they literally become more youthful? In the original concept, were they to regress in the
sense...
You mean
the original concept of Cocoon?
Mm-hmm.
No, what you've seen on the screen is the basic idea that we bought.
So they do not, like, grow more hair and the wrinkles...
We decided we wouldn't... We didn't want to get into that. We thought that age... We thought it was enough for the movements to quicken, for the sexual desires and all of that... We thought that you could change the look of a person by the way he or she walked, by the spirit, the lack of desire to go home or any of that. No, we thought that that would... We thought about, early on, we thought about having younger actors and aging them and then bringing them back to their... But we thought that that would be just a device, and it wasn't Ron Howard's idea to make this a makeup movie. Yeah, Yeah, the big problem in casting the movie was that nobody grows old in this country or in Canada because people who work confound us with their energy, and most of the actors in this movie had to be aged to play their own chronological age. And many of that age were sent home because they were too young. This was the only movie where you could be rejected because you weren't old enough. Well, the he was cured. It was his. You mean he got? He needed more treatment. Yes, he needed more treatment. Well, they would never grow older. There was one line that if they went, you know, into this other world, they would never grow older. It rejuvenated them to a degree, but not to a ridiculous degree. It set them up again, but for a while. I don't know what would happen. I haven't read the sequel.
Well, that definitely does come up, doesn't it?
But
I suppose the sequel. You said it yourself. So.
Well, I haven't thought about it, but I really haven't. You never think about it until a picture has succeeded. Ask Ron.
Talk a little bit about your career and sum up for us some of the things you've learned and some of the things maybe you haven't yet learned.
Well, I'm always learning, and the only thing that hasn't changed for Zanuck and for me is that the story, we are story oriented. We think that the story, the idea, this is an idea movie, basically. We've always found that movies that have a basically intriguing idea work best for us rather than star vehicles or something of that sort. And even star vehicles depend on the existence of a written role. I think that the movie business is a lot tougher than it was in the earlier days because there isn't much time or opportunity for experimentation. Cocoon is a giant experiment in a funny way. We were very lucky to get this on. But generally speaking, the game is in the hands of the market people, a lot of people who concept spinners, rather than we've got a wonderful story, we want to make this movie, and we think it'll work, the instinctive kind of selection of material. Nevertheless, movies today are more eclectic than they ever were before. There is no 20th Century Fox movie. There is no Warner Brothers movie. There's no Columbia movie. Even our movies, Zanuck Brown movies, one is totally different. The Verdict is completely different from Cocoon. Target, our next picture, is totally different from Cocoon. We go with a story. So that in that respect, it's good. What isn't good is that the struggle to make the picture is awesome. And they should give an Academy Award for making a movie, getting a picture made. Because the number of exits, the number of opportunities for the picture never to be made, it's just so that it's a wonder that anything ever gets going. And I admire the new filmmakers, the people who make films like Blood Simple just out of, you know, go out and raise a little money and get it made. That's the only way to learn this business, rather than fighting the marketeers and proving to them that you've got the perfect subject for an 11-year-old mind.
What kind of toll do such frustrations take on you or your associates personally?
I think very heavy tolls. From time to time, I think we go through many periods of depression. It's agonizing. The scenario of movie making is it's tedious. It's tough work, and you can be destroyed by it because you everything that you've worked for years is on the line, and then it either works or it doesn't. And no matter what filmmakers tell you, they do read reviews, and they are very much hurt by them, even though they all say they don't read them until someone shows them a good one. And then they've all read it. it takes a human toll. Many people disappear. There's a new book coming out called Final Cut about the making of Heaven's Gate, which I recommend, written by the man who was in charge of the United Artists when the picture and okayed the project. Fabulous book. Be out, I think, next month. It tells in excruciating detail the toll. This man is living in Munich and writing out of it completely as a young man. On that note, I'm being summoned.
The film was so wonderful that I erased all that. You know.
At the same time, to have a magical name like Tyrone Power, for heaven's sake, what are the pros and cons of that you've experienced thus far in your career?
Attitude. You get a little attitude from people sometimes. You know, they want you to. You know, maybe a little. There's an immediate response. You know, they're looking for something. They want you to prove something. They are determined not to be impressed by you. So they'll shut off or be cold or brusque. You know. And say I'm not going to treat you any differently, buddy. You know, right? But there's right away there's something. You know.
When did you first become aware of that kind of thing?
Instantly, upon getting into the business. You know, you have to be. You're always aware of that. It's all about people anyway. This whole business. So you're aware right away of how people are treating you and how they're reacting. It's a lot harder. My family does this. So it would have been, I had to at least think about it. You know, pictures and playbills and things all around the house from day one, and friends of the family who are actors and directors and, you know, all of this. You have to at least, it has to enter your mind, you know. And I just decided to try it. I loved it. Checked to see if I got any positive feedback at all. And then just didn't want to do anything else. You know.
How old are you?
25.
So you've been in the business actively now for how long?
2.5 years.
So before that time, were you a student? Were you knocking
studying,
around?
Studying, yeah. Yeah. I had to get through college. That was the only stipulation my family placed. So after graduating from college, I came here and studied for 2 years with a teacher named Sandy Meisner, who's well known. Pretty well known. Yeah, that was a terrific experience working there. That was full time, 8-9 hours a day, acting, dance, voice, everything. So far? No, that's all I had done before this, but it's a whole different thing, film. I had such a fantastic time. There, you get something a little different from each one, but they're each one is incredibly attractive in its own way. I'm hooked on doing films. I'd love to do another one now. But then again, I don't want to completely give up the stage, you know, because...
You feel like you learned things from some of the older...
Oh, yeah, sure. On this? Are you kidding? it's a dream cast to work with for a young actor. Got it. It's not like you get your lesson every day, you know. I mean, it's... A little thing here and there, they'll say, try this, let's take 2 steps over, and watching them work, I think, that's the main thing, that's really what I learned from it. You see how they do it, you know, you often don't ask, you know, because it's just, you know, it's tricks of the trade and things, you know, a lot of actors will be happy to tell you, but a lot of them will kind of, you know, they don't want to. But you watch, and you learn that way. A little bit, not much. Only not much. there were a lot of other things more immediate nature that we had to talk about. But a little bit. There wasn't a whole lot, unless, you know, he wanted to go into stories about what happened, you know, here and there. There wasn't a whole lot he could tell me about my dad that I hadn't heard before. I think we both wanted to get beyond that and just find out who we were and become friends.
How old were you?
I was 2 months prior to my debut. Yeah. Not everything. I've seen maybe 9 or 10 of them. Well, if he hadn't been an actor, I don't know if I would have gotten... I might have. You know, it's hard to say. As far as the influence, how in my work, none. Purposely. I look like him. I don't want to imitate him, too. So I think... And I think in making the decision to be an actor, I decided... I'm going to go and find out what this is about and learn what I'm doing so that when I get out there, people may say this or that about me, but no one will be able to say that I don't know what I'm doing, that I can't do my job, you know. And that's the first thing. So I really wanted to start from square one and just... not be influenced by him. Yeah. I mean, you, especially starting out, I guess no matter where you are in your career, you can say the other guy's got it better. But, and I think when you've really made it, you've got a whole different set of pressures and problems. But you find out really quickly whether you really want to do this or not. Because every day is, you know, auditions are the worst thing in the world. You have to get used to them, you know. Going in and doing something and then saying, was that okay? And having somebody say, get out. You know, we like this guy better. Dealing with that every day. Being out of work. You're always, every job comes to an end, you know. You're not going to be sitting at the same desk for 30 years or 40 years. You don't have any security. You know, you never really know what's going to come up next. And all of that stuff, you know, people are, there are a lot of good people and there are a lot of not so good people.
And yet you're in it.
And yet.
And you keep going.
Yeah. You gotta, it's gotta balance out. And for me, the work and the people surrounding that, the creative people, the wonderful people, this cast, Ron, all of that is worth putting up with the rest of it for me. It's for everybody else, it's their own choice, but to me that it balances out. It's just enough to keep me going.
And you live in California?
No, I live here.
You do?
Yeah. I got it. I grew up all over the place. I lived in Mexico for 7 years. The wonder years I spent in California, and I was about 9. I lived in Mexico for about 7 or 8 years, and then my stepfather lived in Arizona, so I'd go spend a lot of time there.
I moved around. The experience
of Yeah, I don't not as much as I did at first. I've sort of gotten used to New York, to the pace here now. but it's stressful. Just going out every day and doing what you have to do every day is stressful. I'm much more relaxed when I'm working than when I'm not. You know, it's the other stuff that's the work for me. The work is the joy part for me. It's the other stuff that's hard.
Wanted us to change the ending of that picture and have Paul Newman reach over and grab the telephone when it was ringing at the very end. And because they said, you know, you have to get Newman and the girl back together again. So that would defeat the whole point of the picture. And the whole point was that his life has now changed, and he's not going to go, you know, we might as well put him back in the, you know, playing the pinball machine if you're going to do that. He cannot pick up that phone. And they said, your middle America is just going to kill you with that. If you cannot do that. And I said, like they did with Gone with the Wind when he slammed the door in her face. And anyway, we prevailed on that. But to get back to your answer, the positive nature of it. You can read a lot of things into this picture if you want to. We didn't design it as any kind of a message picture. But you know, you can say about the picture, it's a picture that older people have choices again. As you grow old, your choices are taken away from you. Either by other people or by nature. Your options are limited. And so it's a picture where older people were presented with a chance to do something positive and given a choice to change the direction of their lives. And they did it. And it's interesting in casting the picture, and we talked to maybe 200 or 300 people. We brought people in who we knew were wrong for any part in the picture, but we just wanted to see them again. And because we hadn't seen them, you know, not even on the Late Show. I mean, we were bringing in people that go way, way, way back. And everybody, you name them, they were in there. And mostly Alice character.
I'd like to see Richard Farnsworth show up out there.
Richard Farnsworth was asking too much money, and we couldn't afford Richard Farnsworth. It was right after the with our pals, and yeah. They did the picture together. But the interesting thing, we ask at the end of each one of these little interviews, we ask everybody the one question, because they all knew the material we'd given them, the script. Would you go? And invariably, they said, most all said, yes, we would definitely go. And the older the people that were brought in, they said it without hesitation. They were definitely, given these conditions, rather than stay in a home, and then end up in a hospital and then just die. Sure, what have I got to lose? Very few. One rather elderly guy said he wouldn't go because he had 11 grandchildren and he wanted to see how they turned out. But that was about it. We never asked them. We only ask that for people. See, Don Amici and Maureen are real active people. They're having a wonderful time with their lives. But if you go down to the rest homes in St. Petersburg, like we did, and talk to those people, I'm telling you, every one of them would go. They have nothing to do with their lives except sit around all day just staring at each other, you know?
But with that in mind, you potentially are tapping an incredible wish fulfillment fantasy in everyone who does want to live forever, who does want to remain young at heart at least. I mean, if that works, you're going to have a tremendous box office, right?
I sure hope so. I, you know,
if there's an ambition behind this picture, it would seem to be to tap that.
You know, we can predict box office. I would think that this picture will open well and have hopefully have a lot of endurance. I certainly don't expect the Rambo lines and stampede to the theater. I'd love to see that. But I think it's going to be a word of mouth. Hopefully a few people say positive things about the picture. That's going to help. What's going to help is getting people in initially, and those people coming out and say, hey, that was an interesting picture. It was different. And I saw some terrific performances. And it had something for young people as well. And you know, it's hopefully it's a word of mouth picture. And I felt good by it, and I was entertained by it, and I didn't see a lot of people killed. There weren't 10 rapes, and I can bring the kids.
Are you saying now that, quite aside from its box office potential, that Cocoon represents maybe a kind of film that's closer to your heart than what you have just described, than the excesses you have just described?
Say then, The Island.
Oh, yeah. Well, The Island... We didn't have a junket on the island. You always know when we have a picture we're proud of when we have a junket. And I'm very... These are, including The Island, they're all our children. And you like some of your children better than, you know, you like others. And eventually, you know, after a few years of working with them, they go off to college and you don't see them again, and that's that. But you all, you know, they're all our babies that we've worked on, and this one in particular, the Sugar Land Express, I have very fond places in my heart for certain pictures. Certain children you just love a little bit more than others, and you're a little prouder than others, and regardless of the kind of business they do, you know, Sugar Land Express was not a successful picture at the box office, but it was a picture that was well thought of.
Yeah, and we remember it now far more than most other successes of that year.
Yeah, that's right. And
pursuing the Stanley analogy that you have here, what is it that makes Zanuck Brown work as, say, successful parents?
Well, you know, there's a lot of unsuccessful pictures mixed in with the good ones, and but it works because, I mean, when it has worked, it's worked because David and I complement each other very well. We're the closest. I'm his best friend, and he's my best friend, literally. Even despite the age difference, and despite the fact that I live on the West Coast and he lives on the East Coast, and we have different natures and everything else, but we work together very well, and we're very close friends. And our tastes are very similar. And when we first started the company some 12 years ago, we decided that we would both have to like something 100%. If I liked it 100%, and if David only liked it 95%, we wouldn't. We'd just say goodbye. That one and one equaled three. We used, you know, that together, if we really were positive about something, we had a better chance of making it work than if just one person said, "I really believe in it," and the other person was a little off. But
is it not one of the more successful dual partnerships in the business right now?
Well, yeah, I guess it is. I guess it's the longest now that we're the longest relationship partnership. I can't think offhand of anybody that's you know, any partnership that's gone on longer.
Does that help then when a new project is on the drawing board and the two of you take it up? Does that mean to the rest of the industry a certain kind of prestige and reputation is backing it?
that.
Well, I think it hopes. Ron told us, quite some time after he'd come on the project, that one of the reasons, and it was a very nice thing to say, was that he liked the fact, and he that he was working with established producers who had been ex-studio heads, and that was a good opportunity for him, that he hadn't had a heavyweight producer on a show.
That's true.
And that a lot of directors don't want the heavyweight producers because they want to do it themselves and they want to have total control. Ron isn't like that at all. He's a very collaborative guy, and he used us for the things that we can bring to a project, and took a lot of the production burden off his shoulders. But a lot of directors don't like that. But I think he's very wise in letting somebody else do a lot of the, logistical dirty work that a producer has to do, and fighting the battles with the studio and doing this and doing that, and he utilized this very well in that respect. I only try to prove myself to myself,
But in comparison,
don't ask me any embarrassing questions.
In comparison with River Rat, you are very restrained in Cocoon, and I'm wondering, with those two extremes in front of some of the viewers, tell us what you enjoy about having a chance to just really let it out as opposed to a chance to holding it all back like you do in Cocoon.
Well, I mean, acting is, you become an actor because you want to try to live a whole bunch of different lives. You know, that's what acting is. If you are forced, say in a TV series or a successful TV series or by whatever circumstances, like Sly is, to constantly replay the same role, one of two things has to happen. Either you're going to be really bored out of your mind or you're going to get very, very rich. Now, since I don't have the option, or haven't had the option up to now anyway, of becoming extremely rich by doing the same part over and over again, that's not something I can really, that's not an option that I can explain or say that, that I turned it down. I'm an actor because I like to start a new life every 2 or 3 months or 6 months in a different place, usually with a different group of people, playing a different kind of part. It's not been easy for me because there's always been a tendency for people to say, well, he did it this, so let's get him to do this again. But I have been able I don't think actors get typecast. I think they typecast themselves because they say yes when they shouldn't say yes. If you don't want to be typecast, then you have to turn down the parts that you feel are repetitions of what you've done before, and I've been able to do that. Certain pictures become enormously successful, like First Blood. So people have a tendency to look at you in terms of that role. But there are a lot of roles that I've played that are completely different from that. This is not the first time. I mean, in 10, I played an extremely different kind of a character. In Never Cry Wolf, I played a different kind of a character. I think that... so I don't see it. I don't see my career as having been a repetition of the same... or variations on the same theme. I see it...
taken by surprise by the reaction to Splash. It's almost like not only did people...
All that really did take me by surprise. The reviews for the picture took me by complete surprise. Even though we'd had pretty good reviews on Night Shift, on the whole, the Splash reviews were even better. And Night Shift is kind of like the best I would have ever hoped for with a comedy because, what makes people laugh is such a subjective thing, and it's a very hard thing to review, and so when the Splash reviews were even better than the Night Shift reviews, I was thrilled. Although I have a rule where I don't read them for like about a month after it's released, because I find myself living and dying by every review. And actually, the good ones I don't even appreciate very much, and I only deal. I start wallowing on the bad ones, and Whereas if I take a whole packet of 50 or 100 reviews and read them, and then the bad ones I can actually deal with in a much more constructive kind of way, and the good ones I seem to enjoy a little bit more. So that's a kind of a rule that I made for myself. But what surprised me, so the reviews surprised me. Audience response didn't, because probably by the time I was talking to you, we'd already screened the picture a number of times in rough cut, and I could see that it was a crowd pleaser and people liked it if they went to see it. So audience reaction per se didn't surprise me, but the big thing was that people showed up from the very first day. And I know that the critical response had a lot to do with that, but there was something else going on there that I still don't really understand, but I'm real grateful for. I just couldn't believe that there were lines, really, from the very first day.
But all of your films so far have been love stories between two seemingly disparate kinds of humanoid-type creatures. And so there must be the predilection you have for that wild kind of love story.
Well,
what's your wife like, Ryan?
She's a pretty regular person from another planet.
As long as she stays away from water.
I like love stories, but I feel that that romance in a movie, you have to be very careful with it, and if it's too mundane, I think people just kind of don't respond to it and don't get it, and they just say, oh, I see, that's they're in love, okay, next. Whereas if you can deal with it in a kind of a more offbeat way, you get to sort of celebrate all the things that I like to see celebrated, and yet somehow it seems unusual and a little bit different. And I like to see people in love. I believe in that romance and courtship and I get a kick out of that. And I also like to see people in situations where they feel disoriented. And then have to kind of work through that.
Love itself can be disoriented.
It sure can.
But at the same time, he does remain behind. This question has come up. I've brought it up before.
Yeah.
Did you ever have second thoughts about that?
We talked about it a lot. And actually, from the beginning, I think even in the book, he stayed behind, as I recall. And he was always the character who was going to stay behind. Jack Guilford character was always going to go. And at the last second, we decided to just shoot it both ways. And then in post-production, we thought, look, this is a lot more honest, a lot more real if one of these characters doesn't go. And I'm glad we made that choice. That then freed us up to think about Steve staying. But he and I talked about it, and the Xanax and I talked a little bit about it. And we just decided that he was young, and he was kind of ambitious guy, and that he wouldn't go, and it was more poignant if he didn't go.
Well, Tony Welch brought up the interesting point that because he's so young, he sort of thinks he's immortal anyway.
Yeah.
I find that very
well. That's what Steve said. He says, you know, I just think this guy would stay. He just believed that this guy would stay behind, and then from my point of view, frankly, I thought, well, God, in Splash, we had the guy go, and it might be just a little, you know, a little pushy or something, and you know, just might be a little too predictable. I think people are going to be expecting that's what this guy would do if they're connecting the two pictures at all. So it was just it was not an easy choice though. My wife has, she has a degree in psychology, and her emphasis was in the field of geriatrics, and she spent off and on a couple of years working as a volunteer and as an employee at various convalescent homes and state institutions and things like that. And she and I actually wrote, she's a writer now, the first screenplay that she ever wrote, she and I collaborated on, something we would never do again. But it was her idea, this story, and it was a kind of a love triangle between a group of people who were 75 years old. And actually, in that story, they were people who had a love triangle in the 1920s and then rediscovered each other again, and then the triangle was reborn. You know, they hadn't learned anything. And that was her point. That was the thing she kept talking about, is that these people, they act like they're in high school. I mean, I don't mean that they've become senile and they're silly, but Cheryl's point is that you never stop acting like you're in high school. You might get a little smarter. You might learn some things, but emotionally, you continue to react the same way. So when we started working on Cocoon, I felt that we had the potential to dramatize that a little bit and have some fun with it. So that when Hume Cronin starts feeling better, you know, he's not older and wiser. He starts feeling feisty, and he falls back into that same thing that had always plagued him before. Only now her character has grown to the point where she's not going to put up with it anymore. You know, and it just opened up some doors, both for humor and for some drama. And that was a really important thing, you know, to make this picture interesting, vibrant, try to give it some pep where we could. That was really a goal. That this movie be an entertainment and not some kind of indictment of life in retirement communities or something. You know, to represent to me all life choices. When I was trying to decide whether or not to do the movie, it was a little unclear to me what the theme of the picture was. And I said, I asked the Zanuck and I asked Tom Benedict, what do you think the theme is? Is it, gee, it's too bad when you get old and nobody pays attention to you? Is that the theme? And they said no. And I was really glad to hear that, because that's kind of what I was getting. And I felt like, well, you've sort of seen that, and you hate to be that on the nose about that idea. And Tom spoke up and said, no, I think it's about when you reach a point in your life at any age where you cut yourself off from new possibilities. And that can happen at 10 or 70. But you know, it's about staying open